Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Most everyone, I would imagine, has used soy sauce, whether you're eating sushi or a sauce for a Chinese dish or many of the other Asian dishes. But what is soy sauce? And where did it come from? We're going to find out all about it and more today on A Taste of the Past. Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Linda Palaccio, and I mentioned soy sauce, and yes, of course, we all know about that salty brown liquid, but do we really know what it is? Salty liquids, of course, have been around for millennia, and anyone who's studied culinary history, of course, knows the ancient Romans used and made liquamen, garum, from fermented fish. But soy sauce is kind of eluded a lot of people in this country as far as what it is and where it comes from. And why did it evolve? Here today joining me is somebody who can hopefully set the record straight and let us know all about it. She is Chef Helen Roberts. And Helen is the Director of Culinary Development and Manager of Public Relations for Kikkoman, and we all know that recognizable bottle of Kikkoman soy sauce. One of the reasons I have Helen here today, Helen is from San Francisco representing Kikkoman, is that Kikkoman is celebrating 300 years of soy sauce production, which I think is pretty phenomenal. And there was a wonderful event this past week, in celebration of Kikkoman's 300th anniversary, a documentary filmmaker, Lucy Walker, has made a wonderful documentary film talking about the Kikkoman factory and the history. And it was quite a beautiful film, and it's going to premiere December 23rd all around the country. So I don't want to give everything away. I want to have our special guest tell us all about it. And welcome, Helen.
Hi, Lucy.
Helen, tell me, you have been with Kikkoman for...
I've been with Kikkoman since the 1980s, so 32 years.
32 years. Now, not with Kikkoman in Japan. You've been with Kikkoman
Kikkoman in the U.S. USA. Mm-hmm. I started out doing new park development. And now I'm the head chef. Very exciting.
Yes, indeed, because, you know, we think of soy sauce only being poured into the little dish and dipping our sushi into it, but as a creative...
And don't forget pouring it over the rice.
And pouring it over the rice, right. And as a creative culinary director, later in the show, I'm sure I'm going to ask you all kinds of questions, because I'm sure we have lots to learn about uses for soy sauce. But first, I want to know a little bit... Well, tell me a little bit about the history of Kikkoman, Kikkoman USA. I learned last night from the film some wonderful facts about the company, and that being that it's the first Japanese production company to open in the USA.
Well, everybody thinks it's Toyota.
Yeah.
But actually, soy sauce was the first Japanese-owned factory to be made in the United States.
Wow. And where did they open that factory?
Wisconsin.
Can you believe that? Okay, so here they have this company, the first Japanese company ever to open in the U.S., and they opened in Wisconsin, which was wonderful, but who would have ever thought, right?
Well, they started buying wheat and soybeans and sending that to Japan. And somebody thought, why are we shipping when we can make this right here where we're buying this American grain?
Makes sense. Well, the company started quite a wonderful business, and from the interviews in the documentary film, It must be, and with you being there for so long, for 32 years, must be a wonderful company to work
for. It has changed my life quite
a bit.
Wow,
interesting.
Being from Brooklyn and now being the head of the test kitchen for the biggest Japanese food company in the world is amazing.
That is, that's really something. Congratulations to you. Tell me a little bit for our listeners about the history of soy sauce itself, or the background of soy sauce itself.
Well, soy sauce was discovered in early, like 500 BC in China. And at that time, it was made with soybeans. But it was started out as the liquid that people would preserve their meats or fish. Mm-hmm. And that was like a byproduct. And that's where the idea of soy sauce came from.
Right. I mentioned early at the top of the show, the ancient Romans made liquamen to season their foods. And that really was fermented fish guts, if you will. Still made today. Fish sauces. Fish sauces are very popular in Southeast Asia particularly, right?
So when a Japanese monk went to China, but he was a vegetarian. So he decided to find a way to make that same product to preserve meat with grains and salt instead of a meat byproduct.
Uh-huh.
And that's how soy sauce became alive.
Interesting. And, I mean, we can only use conjecture as to, or speculate on to why a liquid like that came to be. I know, being a specialist in Roman history, culinary history, knowing that salt was a commodity. I mean, there were taxes on salt. Salt was a very valuable product. So this was a means in the Roman days, certainly, of stretching salt and having creating a more of it that was a salty liquid to season foods and would have deeper, earthier, fishier flavor too.
Right.
I would imagine that's a similar reason for the
soy sauce.
Absolutely,
yes. And then the fact that, like you said, there's more uses for it. So you're using the water is making it available to use in so many different types of foods.
Interesting. It has, and what I like about soy sauce, and I'll ask you, are the components and the different flavors we taste. Explain to us a little bit about that.
Well, it's amazing because it starts out with the four ingredients. Originally, it did not have wheat, but Kikkoman added wheat because we felt that it would make it a more mellow taste and not just harsh soybeans.
Mm-hmm.
So, but with that, and so water, wheat, soybeans, and salt, and then we start off with a little fermentation. And about 6 months later, this wonderful aroma and smell. So there's so many components of what happens when you blend those four ingredients together.
I think this is one of the first products that people really came to recognize what is meant in the Japanese culture, culinary culture, as umami.
Absolutely.
You have the sweet, the salty, the sour, and here you have
bitter and umami, which was finally discovered and isolated about 50 years ago.
Hmm.
Yes, last year was the 50th anniversary of the discovery of umami. Yes.
Yeah. And it's really taken over the culinary world the past 15 years or so here in America. You know, so it's really, you know, interesting that this has that earthy flavor. You can't really put your finger on it. You know, it's kind of an earthy quality.
Well, in the test kitchen at Kikkoman, when we taste something, I learned early on to look for that. Close your eyes and take away the taste and the salt. I mean, take away the salt and the sweet. But the umami is the mouthful, the richness of it.
Hmm. Interesting.
So that's, we always have to, is there enough umami? We have to ask that in every product we put out. Do you taste the umami? And it's like, at first, never heard of that word. Of course, here in New York, we talk about umami. It is a compliment. Umami, you look good. So it was like, what are they talking about?
Oh, yeah, well, that's cute, right? You mentioned briefly the fermentation, and you were going through it was 6 months. But I want to back up a little bit and talk about types of soy sauce. So they're really, Kikkoman is a brewed, fermented
and
soy sauce.
One of the things is that in Japan, there are about 16 types of soy sauce. And in America, there is no standard for soy sauce. So that's why we have a product that's made basically with hydrolyzed vegetable protein, caramel color, and maybe molasses, different things. And it takes 2 weeks to make it.
So they just boil it and blend it.
Absolutely.
Right?
And it's called soy sauce. But for for the standards in Japan, there are different colors of soy sauce. There's different intensity of flavors and different amounts of sodium and sweetness levels. So there are 16 different types.
Hmm. Now, people often equate the soy sauce with something that's too much salt.
Right.
And actually, there's not as much sodium in
absolutely
soy sauces as using straight salt.
It tastes salty because I think people haven't learned how to use soy sauce properly. And a lot of times it's too salty because they've used way too much. We use soy sauce as an umami ingredient to increase the flavors of everything else. It's normally, unless you're buying something called soy sauce chicken, it's not a flavoring mm-hmm. agent. It helps the other items have a better taste. So
it's the background of it, yeah, background flavor in there. Yeah. And I think some in the film I was interested in talking, they had a technician on the screen talking about tasting soy sauce and producing it. And she had a little teaspoon. She said, and it's really good with ice cream. You wouldn't think it would be, but it's good with
ice cream. I have a recipe on the Kikkoman USA website for soy sauce ice cream. It's the taste is like a salty caramel.
Oh.
So I'm using the soy sauce as you would use a vanilla flavor.
Yeah. Oh, that makes all the sense in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
And brown sugar and your egg yolks and your cream, and it's just delicious.
Well, so in the process, I wanted to back up for the process because I think the brewing process and the time it takes is so important. In fact, the motto or creed of the Kikkoman company is make haste slowly. That's kind of an oxymoron. I mean, it's a make haste, but do it slowly. And that sort of describes the whole process of making soy sauce, correct?
So you have a goal, and the best way to do that is carefully, methodically, to get the best end product. That's what make haste slowly means.
But then get it out there. Right?
Oh, definitely do it, but...
yeah.
With precise care.
Hmm. Well, in the brewing process, as you mentioned before, there are three steps to the brewing process. And the first is the koji making. Now, what is koji?
Koji is the combination of the wheat and the soybeans.
And the soybeans.
Yeah.
Okay. So they're mixed together and...
That's mixed together for about 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And then to that we add a proprietary Kikkoman mold, which will start the fermentation.
No secrets given away here, folks.
No, ma'am.
Okay. And salt water. You do add salt water. I mean,
right.
Salt
that's
is
where
added,
we start the brine and the fermentation with mm-hmm. the salt water.
Okay. And then that mash, just like a, you know, Kentucky
we call it
bourbon
a
or something.
Yes.
Yeah, the mash is formed, right?
Yes.
And that, so that ages for the fermentation about 6 months, you said, or?
It takes about 6 months.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. No soy sauce before it's time. and then that's obviously strained out. And I said refined. What do they mean by then it's refined?
It's pasteurized to make it shelf stable and
okay.
they won't have any mold or anything that's growing.
All right. And it was interesting to read and to hear in the film as well, that the documentary film, that that the residue, you know, the solids... don't go to waste.
Are reused. So the soybean solids are served to, we sell that to farmers for grain to feed their cows and their animals. And then the oil is used to oil the machinery that we use in our factories, the soybean oil.
Wow. So nothing goes to waste.
Everything is recycled back into.
That's pretty phenomenal. I mean, that's Japanese efficiency.
Absolutely.
At its best. I love it. And the non-brewed process, of course, I mean, they're out there, but how would we, let's say in a blind tasting, how would somebody know the difference between a fine brewed soy sauce and a quick-made blended soy sauce?
Well, I think the first thing that will give it away is the aroma. Once you open the bottle of each, you will have the fermented soy sauce smells like a wine or like a beer with the yeast, and the one that's not brewed smells a little like you get that sharp sense in your nose. It's like a burning, kind of like an alcohol burn. So it's a totally different. One makes your mouth water, and the other one makes your eyes tear up.
And what about the look and the texture?
The naturally brewed soy sauces are very warm colored and clear. It's a brown, but it's a nice clear color. It's not muddy like you would find the one that takes about 2 weeks to process.
Now, I know there are special little cups for testing or
that's what we use for our soy ceremony. We call it the soy ceremony. When we are introducing someone to soy sauce, we will have different types, and that way they can smell it. It's a very flat, wide cup that you can bring to your nose and smell and sip out of and taste, and you can see the different colors.
Mm-hmm. Now, I saw one of those cups. In fact, I got one as a, mm-hmm. a gift last night, and there are blue rings in the bottom of the cup.
Right.
Talk about this.
It's very important for the color of soy sauce in Japan, because a lot of times you want to introduce the flavor, but you don't want it to discolor your food.
Mm-hmm.
So with those blue rings, we have we can determine, because with the naturally brewed soy sauce, the blue rings will turn different shades of blue. Like you'll get like a violet, deep purples with some of the darker soy sauces. And then with the non-brewed, it's just like black, or you just see residue. Mm-hmm.
So the important thing is you should be able to see the rings.
You should be able to see those rings. Mm-hmm. And then we have what we call PKs, which are the colors from 0 to like 58 for the different colors of soy sauce. And in between that, we use those cups to determine what the PKs are.
Interesting. When I did pour some into, I had a bottle of Kikkoman. I only buy Kikkoman, so I had a bottle of... No, that's not true. I also use some Vietnamese and Malaysian soy sauces. Soy sauces are popular throughout Asia and Southeast Asia.
But those probably are made without wheat.
Right. Differences. Well, and I think some of the Korean types are made without wheat. Well, and wheat has been an issue for a lot of people who do enjoy the flavors of soy sauce but are gluten intolerant.
Right.
Does Kikkoman make a gluten-free soy
sauce? We finally did it. We exchanged the wheat for rice. And it was the softest and closest we could come to Kikkoman.
Oh, that'll be interesting to taste.
So we have a gluten-free soy sauce and a gluten-free teriyaki.
Because I know there are tamari, a type of tamari sauce that has at least less gluten.
Because the tamari sauce is made just with soybeans as well. But our Kikkoman's tamari has wheat because the Japanese feel the wheat softens the overall taste.
Oh, so you get a thinner, kind of not as, with just soybean alone, you get a thinner taste?
It's a roasted, more mellow flavor of the soy sauce.
With the wheat.
With the wheat.
With the wheat. Uh-huh. Interesting. Well, I'm going to find out from Helen more about alternative uses rather than just sushi for the soy sauce when we come back after a brief break.
It's summertime. It's summertime. The bars are closing. The bars are closing. All the doors are open.
You're listening to Throw a Parade by Cookies on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
So find your friends. So find your friends. Tell them what they want to hear. Tell them what they want to hear. I tell them not to be so. I tell them not to be so. Goddamn uptight.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
We are back on A Taste of the Past, and I'm talking with Helen Roberts, and Chef Helen Roberts. She is the creative culinary director of culinary development. Okay.
Which is our test kitchen.
Great. And manager of public relations. And I want to know about your test kitchen. That's what I want to talk about.
That's where all the magic happens.
All right. So we know about soy sauce. We know it tastes great in making all those Chinese dishes where we put it in, basically in the sauce at the end, but and dipping, of course, our sushi rolls in it. But tell me some of the things you're working on, some things we might not think to use soy sauce for.
Well, one of the big surprises is that we use a lot of soy sauce and chocolate. A lot of chocolate companies actually use soy sauce. You can boost your chocolate flavor and use less chocolate base.
Wow.
And reduce the sodium in your chocolate. Huh. What we've done, oh my God, my favorite thing to do with a bottle of soy sauce, take the little plastic top off, throw in your garlic, your ginger, and you have it infusing. So when you reach for that bottle, look how many more flavors you have at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a fun thing. Some of the other things I've done is, for Thanksgiving, I did a turkey brine using soy sauce instead of salt, and then the sugar and your different herbs, like your oreganos and rosemary and thyme. We've had major success. We've never had successful sales in November because it's holiday. But since I introduced the savory soy brine, it's been through the roof just for holiday. So I've been teaching people, why don't you practice on the chicken? And then when it comes time for Thanksgiving, we had a successful, phenomenal program. Mm-hmm. That we call the Kikkoman Juicy Bird Project.
Well, I know the Chinese will sell brown ducks or brown chickens that have been steeped in a tea and soy mixture.
Right. Oh.
It colors the skin, makes it look a little more appetizing.
That's quite like a 3 or 4 day process.
Yeah, so that's an old custom.
But do you believe that we sell, of course, a lot of soy sauce to Chinese restaurants? You wouldn't believe that after that is Mexican restaurants. We are so popular. Huh. A lot of your fajitas, they're marinating their meats in soy sauce.
Mm-hmm.
They learned the secret long ago.
Interesting. And, of course, I forgot to mention the different products like ponzu.
Oh.
Ponzu is a soy-based
soy-based. We have lime and lemon. And it's actually very, very low in sodium. It's the lowest sodium product that we make.
I always kind of refer to it as a Japanese ketchup, in a way.
Oh, yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, that is good. So if there was something that I had seen, I'd come across in some of the literature about a buttermilk fried chicken and it had soy sauce in it?
It has, actually I'm using tempura batter and soy milk make the buttermilk fried chicken. But it's one of the most popular. People eat a lot of chicken, and when they come to Kikkoman, they're looking for something to do with chicken. So that's our most popular chicken recipe. We also have one where we're doing a herb, bake it with savory herbs and soy sauce and potatoes, like a one dish meal, mm-hmm. which is our number one recipe.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, I think it's quite interesting that Japan embraced the soy sauce. I mean, considering that it started in China in so long ago, what, like 2,500 years ago or so? You said 500 BC, right? So that's about 2,500 years ago. And the Japanese have embraced it, and other soy products, miso and tofu-based products. And in fact, so much so, for Kikkoman's celebration last night, I have to tell people, there was a wonderful, fun demonstration by Chef Morimoto. And he did a little Iron Chef carving of a whole tuna, which was quite impressive.
He's a really good friend of Kikkoman.
Uh-huh, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know the gentleman's name who was making the soba noodles next to him.
Someone on his staff.
Alongside of him, he was making soba noodles. What an entertaining evening that was, watching him. And then that dish was served with some soy sauce, the raw tuna and soy sauce and the soba noodles. What a treat.
The soba noodles were made with the green tea. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I saw him
really
add that.
Interesting.
Yeah. We were all saying, what's that green substance he's adding? And then we found out. And that was a very energetic demonstration by all means. Too bad he's not in that documentary, right? That would make for good watching too. The whole aesthetic of the Japanese production, I think, is indicative of probably the company's policies and treatment of its staff members too. You said working with them changed your life, which I heard often in the documentary last night. Tell me a little bit about the Japanese company and some of their some of the practices that just made you feel that it was life changing for you.
The fact that the main thing is that it's family owned business, and it has been for 300 years, the same family, Mr. Mogi, that you saw in the film.
Yes,
his great-great-great-great...
That we forgot to mention, right.
Was the one that started the whole Kikkoman
company was started by a woman.
300 years ago in Japan. So that feeling is brought to the boardroom, and everyone's opinion is valued, and it's just part. It's quite a process to sit there and be part of this, and to... Especially, they want to do business in America. So a lot of times it's like, well, Helen, what they bring in a product and they say, Helen, what would you do with this? And I'm allowed to just play with it. And sometimes I'm saying that one has to go back to the ocean. We're not eating that. But a lot of the sauces that are coming in from Japan are very tasty and very, very delicious. So each person has a feels like they're part of the whole plan. It's not, no one person doesn't feel as if they're a big part of Kikkoman.
So it's not so much top down all the time.
Not
as
at
we,
all.
As we have in so many companies.
You know? So many times we all roll up our sleeves and work together from the president down to everyone.
Interesting. Yes. Well, and their creed, make haste slowly. They're actually, it's sort of like Confucius, I said earlier in the, before we started the show. There are many different articles in, what is it, I guess their
It's the family creed. And each family, large family in Japan has a family creed. And Kikkoman has about 120 creeds, but we narrowed it down to 16 that makes the most sense for the story we want to tell.
And they're all just wonderful creeds to live by. Well, the main one, make haste slowly, in the whole production of the soy sauce. But faith is a source of virtue. I love this one. Don't carelessly fall into debt. That was a good one. We should all listen to that one. Education is our responsibility, and give back to society. They're all very wonderful.
It's a family creed, but it's used in the boardroom. These are how we make our decisions based on. So all the employees, we listen to these ideas, and it's just part of the philosophy.
So this woman, Koji. She,
Miss Mo, well, she changed her name to Mrs. Mogi.
Mogi, I'm sorry, yes. Mogi. No, Koji is is the mash. I'm sorry, Mogi. Okay, so this was 300 years ago, and where did the first company was in Osaka?
No, that's Noda City, and it's still
Noda
City in Japan. I had a chance to visit that factory. It's still in use today. Very old woman, very old man, and you have to take your shoes off, you have to bow. They do this every day before they start work. And that's where they make the soy sauce for the emperor and the emperor's family.
So the emperor has selected Kikkoman as his soy sauce, huh?
Yes.
Interesting. I forgot to ask you during the process, when you're waiting for this fermentation of the mash, is this done in barrels or in steel vats? Or
it's in steel vats, stainless. Yeah, stainless steel vats.
Okay, all right. As most products today are.
Well, it's not rushed. So where you have when we're about to filter out the soy sauce, we don't press it out. We let it self press. So it takes even longer for it to self press down and down and down till all the liquid runs out. You're not forcing these amino acids out of the product.
Which I imagine you get some particles in there as well if you did that, right?
Well, it's just a more gentle way to produce it. Make haste slowly.
Make haste slowly. I think that's something we should probably all adopt in our lives and apply that to just about anything that we do. Well, it's been a real education for me in soy sauce. And Helen, I thank you so much for joining me today. Helen Roberts of Kikkoman. And I hope that you'll join me again.
Thank you, Linda.
And thank you for listening to A Taste of the Past.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.